Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Shelly and John back. How are we all?
Not too bad.
Pretty good over here.
So we could not resist. We had to talk about goofy, cheesy superhero films and shows. They can be original. They can be based on a comic. They can be disowned by their studio, but they got on YouTube. Long story short, if you don't want to talk about those, you can also mention a cult thing that's just like, yeah, this is just a fun movie that I love with all my heart.
I got plenty of those.
Don't mention any porn parodies, promise. So, Shelley, when did you get into just goofy movies that were just based on just some comic that you may or may not have read, and you're like, this is just too nutty. How do I describe this?
Oh, man. I can't remember the exact age, but I was definitely a kid. Easily.
It's around the same time every other video game is becoming a Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah, pretty much.
John, when did you start noticing that people could fly, but they weren't Superman?
Probably also when I was a kid.
Oh, man. Oh. I think I just started realizing that there was good movies out there, and then there were bad movies out there that everybody wanted to hunt down a copy of, regardless of whether their Blockbuster had it out of stock at all times. I pretty much tried to hunt down. I'm so glad that I avoided Superman 3 and 4 for the longest time, because I was like, oh man, I would have pissed off everyone in my household had I brought that turkey home. But you know, what's funny is I even started to troll some DC guys saying, hey, it's better than Batman versus Superman. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm like, oh, well, at least it's not 3 hours long.
Very true.
Nuclear Man is hysterical.
Oh, he is.
I even saw someone do a mashup one time where they put Ryan Reynolds' face over it, and they're like, let's have a modern day.
I saw that.
Jesus. Oh. So I'll mention a few of these and see if anyone's seen them. Oh, God. Did anyone ever bother with Tank Girl?
I did see Tank Girl.
I was a teenager, and we had Comedy Central, and every time it'd be like, oh, they're going to play Tank Girl. I want to see Tank Girl once, and then I always forget. But then I finally got to see Tank Girl, and I was like, that wasn't too bad, you know?
Like, it really isn't all that half bad. I mean, you're having Ice-T play like a giant dog / mercenary.
Yep.
And Lori Petty just seems to have you having a lot of fun, you know, League of Her Own, Point Break.
It was awesome
in the 90s, and just now just kind of just does mild brief supporting work, but it's like, this was just a wacky fun. It doesn't overstay its welcome either. It's just like, it gets right to it.
No, it really doesn't.
Yeah,
it's like, exposition, go somewhere else.
It's actually my favorite role of the White Petties, to be fair.
She's a badass. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What about, did anyone ever force themselves to watch the 94 Fantastic Four?
I have not had a chance to say that.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that was a thing until, what was it, Arrested Development?
Oh, that's right. Oh.
Yeah.
Pull it out, yeah. And you're like, this exists. I'm like, it was
that thing?
That was the fun of it. It was a lost movie, and
yeah,
sure
I resaw it again years later because YouTube has it, and I really do not mind it. It's just silly. It's just goof, schlocky, total Roger Corman.
That's right. Of course.
But I find it so funny that out of all the movies he banned this one. I'm like, why did you ban this one?
Oh, wow.
I thought you had no taste, so what does it matter?
Exactly.
I didn't see that, but I did see the 90s Captain America with Red Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Yes! Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, those are the 70s. Ooh, even better. So are you thinking of the 1990 Captain America?
With the 1990.
Matt Salinger of all
people.
That's
not... Oh, I thought that was Red Brown. Oh, my
well,
bad.
He did a similar kind of acting thing.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Groaning in rubber. But yeah, Red Brown in the 70s. I've once mentioned those.
70s one, too?
Yeah. I was in the 70s ones, and Christopher Lee was like an evil Nazi warlord in one of them.
Of course, Christopher Lee.
Oh, man. Always Christopher Lee. It is kind of wild how basically, you know, the Tick 90s show was on at that point, and it's just so cool how that and the Flash 90s show were being acknowledged, even in the new canon, and it was just so wild how... I think that's just kind of was the reference point for everybody. It's like everybody's got to be dressed in blue or red and just go with it. And it is just so hysterical how it just kind of just became a trend. And so when the Phantom came around and he's, you know, you got Billy Zane dressed in pink and an evil Captain out of Jones and Treat Williams, I'm like, yeah, it all makes sense. Basically,
everybody. I was going to mention that one, actually.
Go for it. And I feel like the Rocketeer is like the more successful one. But, like, the Phantom just seems to just be just kind of more shameless and goofy and just has a lot, like, 5 times more villains. Like, even Kerry Tagawag is there and gets blown up, so.
Oh, yeah. And you got Treat Williams clearly having fun playing his villain.
Oh, God.
I mean, I love it. I love it so much. I can't talk about that enough. I'm just like, over the top he goes.
Yeah. Did you got were any of you ever renting stuff from the dubbed Hong Kong section at your video store?
No, I didn't get that chance.
No, unfortunately.
So I saw the dubbed version of Black Mass, the Jet Li movie. Ooh. And I actually...
Oh, wow.
The uncut version is way better, but I didn't mind this one because it just redubbed it with a bunch of electronic, you know, techno and rap music in the background. But... They used to play parts of it on like Sci-Fi Channel and FX, and then just they stopped playing it. But he's kind of badass in that he's kind of flies around kind of like Batman, and then he just takes out the trash with he's kind of a mutant X-Men. He has all these supernatural like, you know, fighting abilities. So that's how they work in the excuse to have a bunch of martial arts and everything. But it's just really a lot of fun, and the villain is often mocked because everyone makes fun of how he looks like Howard Stern on drugs. That's the
exactly. I was about to say that.
Giant long hair, and he's got a giant futuristic machine gun. And the dubbing's even more hysterical because he lets out a scream for no reason. And I'm like, that's awesome. It's really gritty and straightforward, as opposed to lowbrow, but even people who want lowbrow entertainment are going to just really drink a beer into it. Oh, and God, the 90s, man. Did you guys ever watch crazy stuff that was like on the WB or UPN, like The Sentinel or Nightman?
No, I never saw those.
Those were just so wild because it's like they were just their own thing. And it's like The Sentinel was weird because it's like he would basically... have the special ability to like sense anything, and there's the slow motion on it is just outrageous. And the rest of the time, just
anything,
right? And they just have him be like a consultant with an LA police department, and the show was just like both goofy and kind of embrace the cheese because it just would say he must go find himself in the tropical jungles of South America.
That sounds amazing.
It really is amazing. Oh man. There's one episode where they have to basically get rid of a bunch of terrorists and robbers who have taken over the police station, and they're dispatched by feeding them to an alligator. I am not making this shit up. And I remember just watching this because Sony's Get TV station was airing some reruns, and I had some family that walk in and they're like, what the fuck is this? I thought we were done watching this cheesy show. But yeah, it's kind of a weird mashup of X-Files, Lethal Weapon, and even Speed. And you'll know what I mean, because it's like there's just so much just weird just driving around and just stopping a bunch of bad guys and bombers, and it really is just a one of a kind, just wacky show that is also a lot of fun and very well acted, considering its comic book superhero mentality to it. And that was around the same time there was that other crazy show on Sci-Fi Channel called Black Scorpion. I never saw it, but I was just like, wow, who isn't in this crazy Roger Corman produced show? Oh, so I still haven't seen Vampirella. John, tell us about Barbed Wire.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Crazy kind of shitacular.
Oh, yeah, especially Pam Anderson as your lead.
Jesus.
And, yeah, that didn't help much with me, especially at that time. I was like, wow, you're making Anna Nicole Smith look decent at best.
Oh, dear.
And... yeah, it's an interesting one, especially with the cast they have. You got Xander Berkeley, Steve Railsback shows up, and oh my god, particularly the ending you see in that film, which I always laugh at every time. With
oh god, and that explosion too. That
explosion.
Like it's like Jesus.
It's like wow.
And Jango Fett before he's well known. Yeah, tomorrow.
I know. That's the sad part there.
Are you by any chance either of you fans of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
I saw
it. I can tolerate that.
It wasn't awful. I mean,
it's pretty imperfect, but yeah, it's just like it's not unwatchable like I would hear so many people make out to be, and it's got a pretty big cult following just because, you know, the Sean Connery factor. But
yeah,
I saw it around the same time I was watching his James Bond movies and The Rock on TV all the time, so I just, for me, it was kind of like a mixture, you know. It was by the director of Blade, who'd done some other B-movie work on Death Machine and Alien 3, and it, to me, it all kind of just came together as it's like, okay, so again, it's just a regurgitation like of basically every other Connery movie. Like, it starts off, there's a weird spy and assassin who's killing people, and he tries to tell the guy, who are you, what are you doing? And the guy poisons himself, and I'm like, and I guess you could say it's like the Monster Squad on acid, because I mean, yeah, you got all these,
yeah, like, I could say that
all the, and Universal classic horror monsters all in one giant oyster, the Invisible Man, and what's her name from La Femme Nikita was in there. I was like, okay, interesting. And
oh, that's right, I forgot.
It was kind of a, you know, everyone kind of got so distracted by Sean Connery and the director hating each other's guts on the set and him retiring, and the director deciding to just go back to doing effects work. But it seemed like Fox didn't know how to market it. It's like they just wanted something else that, again, could kind of, they could share the X-Men money with. But I mean, O3 was a big year, because I mean, again, you got other blockbusters like Lord of the Rings and just all this other stuff coming out. So I was like, I think it was going to get lost in the shuffle one way or the other.
I mean, it's sad that's Carmen's last film right there.
And it's it's a shame that Ronald Moore never approves of anything based on his work, whether it's Watchmen or Constantine or V for Vendetta, which is very faithful, but he never saw it and he talks shit about it. But it's like, I tried reading the comic and I couldn't get into it. It just had all this other morbid shit like rape and gore, and I was just like, yeah, I think I'll go with this more lighthearted, fun movie.
Yeah.
Because at least it's more like The Rock and Terror, where you're just seeing all this stuff, and One of the criticized moments of it was having Shane West as Tom Sawyer, not because of his acting or because of just the character, but just they wanted something that could kind of represent the Americans mixing in with all these other Victorian era people. And I thought that was inspired, at least from a cinematic standpoint. And everyone else was like, oh, but he's not in the comic. And I'm like, well, you're going to have to make some compromise. This movie at least looks, sounds, and feels good, as opposed to seeming like just a total cluster and no one really knows what to make of it. It's not the
like a blatant cash grab they would do nowadays.
Oh. So then, what's the other one? It's just so wacky. Then there was that Lewis and Clark 90s show.
What with Dean Cain?
Dean Cain and Jerry. Yeah, it's like, it seems like.
That wasn't too bad, but then again, I was a kid when I saw it, so it's like, wow, this is great. And then you watch it when you're older, and it's like, wow.
It seems like everybody has forgotten about it. Like, ABC Family kind of stopped playing it after, like, 04, and I was like, seriously? I thought they were all into anything.
Yeah.
There was some weird people who got their start on that show, too. I was like, what?
Okay.
Tracy Scoggins from Babylon 5 was on this? Okay. But we gotta talk about Still with Shaquille O'Neal.
Of course, I knew who would bring that up.
I saw this one time while I was pet sitting, and it was on HBO at 3 in the morning. I'm like, this is comedy gold.
It is.
It's like, this movie should not exist. But man, Shaquille O'Neal could have been an action star. And he just never got offered anything after this.
Nope.
Oh, so same year as Batman and Robin. Which one is sillier?
I'd say Batman and Robin, honestly. Especially all the stuff that happens in that one.
Because, I mean, yeah, you got Mr. Freeze played by Schwarzenegger, and Vivica Fox, and Uma Thurman, of all people. Yeah. And it was like, instead with Steel, it was basically just Shaq doing with Shaft as his dad. I see what they did there.
Yes.
And then Judd Nelson.
Judd Nelson is the villain. And who is the highlight of the movie, in my opinion?
What I like even more is Charles Napier from Murdoch from Rambo 2 and those Austin Powers movies. And there he is, just being the typical just angry general. And he just seems to have the most WTF look on his face. And you don't know if it's just part of the character or part of his look when he gets an angry phone call from Shaq.
probably
a bit. I'm going to tell you all, I'm going to go kiss my ass. I'm not going to do anything about it. He's like, oh my God. Shaquille O'Neal should win. Did he win a Razzie for this?
Probably. I think he was nominated. I don't think he won.
Oh, boy.
I think Kevin Costner won.
Yeah, for The Postman.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. 97, baby.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many superhero films I have never even heard of them. Just like... Wow.
Did you ever bother with any of the Punisher movies?
No.
It's like Dolph Lundgren from Rocky IV, Thomas Jane from Deep Blue Sea, and now this one random guy who no one's heard of from Rome, Ray Stevenson.
It's the comes out Punisher.
Same year as The Dark Knight, and basically they got Jigsaw, who was always the equivalent of the Joker, and is like, he's trying to do basically Dominic West from The Wire and The Hour, is trying to do an even crazier version of Heath Ledger's Joker. I'm like, this is wild.
And I love it. Every second of it.
His origin story isn't being dumped into acid or anything. It's being sliced up with a bunch of glass. Oh, man.
So weird, but I love it.
Gotta love it. Jonah Hex. Anyone ever bother with that crazy?
I saw that in the theater, actually.
So basically, James Brolin and Megan Fox and John Malkovich. Wow. Yeah.
And Michael Fassbender shows up also.
Oh, yeah. And he gets burned alive or some shit. And
And we're on that. Speaking of.
By the director of film. Prank.
Well, I think they produced it and directed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They brought someone in from, like, John Carter or Toy Story 3 or something.
Kind of like that, yeah.
It was watchable, but I don't know. I still don't know what to make of it. It's just a very goofy movie.
I mean, it's mostly a great cast, but, like, I mean, excluding Megan Fox, but that's a different story.
We've talked enough about the Hellboy movies and Suicide Squad.
Oh, yeah.
What is the overall nature of the Snyder Cut or the Whedon Cut of Justice League? Will anyone ever agree on this damn movie?
I have no idea. I still have yet to watch any version of it. But to be fair, I'm more of a Marvel girl.
Oh, snap. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
All good. I think the new cut is way better, but it should have just been a mini series from the get-go.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
Like, about that.
And why did this have to get so chaotic? Because it's like, yeah, it's like the 2017 one was okay, but it suffered from just having unfinished effects and you didn't care about anyone. It's like this one is long, but it totally restructures and re-edits and even reanimates certain people, and it's just like it's just plays way better. And I'm like, had they released this could have easily been their, if they could have just minimized it to 3 hours, it could have been a fun Lord of the Rings epic, but they didn't do that.
I was trying to like a mini series, like in four parts, like they were originally going to do.
Well, there you go. Oh, and I had no idea, speaking of DC, that the Red movies were actually based on a comic that was a division of DC.
That's true.
And the creator was kind of like the one who did the movie Wanted, where he was just fine with them changing it up, since the characters in that were technically villains who had Tarantino-esque humor. And so it's like they retained that, again, Ocean's 11.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Now I know him. Oh, with like a bunch of like the older, I guess, action heroes, not Expendables, but like,
yeah,
so yeah.
More like, I guess, kind of spy-ish.
Assassins set up.
Yeah, like that.
Had Morgan Freeman, Helen Mirren, and Mary Louise Parker,
and John Malkovich.
Right, and it's just so wild how just all the other colorful people they get in there is like, Richard Dreyfuss is like a crooked senator. Anthony Hopkins is a crazy terrorist in the second one. So, yeah. Brian Cox is there as, like, this guy who's, like, a secret, like, retired spy-turned driver. And he's, like, has a thing for Helen Mirren. He's like, hey,
yep.
I'll give you a free ride.
Yep.
Wait, Ernest Borgnine was in that?
Yeah. Yep, it's, like, movie. The final movie he was in. And
wow.
He's very nutty.
I mean.
Oh, yeah.
It made sense for me when they were doing like a tribute to him and Morgan Freeman showed up to hand it to him because they had just finished doing that movie together. So I was like,
oh, yeah,
I think if you haven't seen them, I think you'll definitely dig them because this is like, and they're impossible to not find. They're like always playing on loop on TNT every weekend. So,
particularly Malkovich, but he's a lot of fun in his role.
Yeah, Bruce was having fun. Malkovich was definitely the highlight. And Louise was really funny, and Merritt is even funnier because it's like she's just always talking to them on the phone while she's covering up a bunch of bodies or, you know, pouring nitrogen on them. I'm like, oh my god. It's like at one point she's talking to him but the bodies are on fire. Jesus. This is PG-13. The sequel was done by like the director of Galaxy Quest, so that made sense to me. I was like, yeah, this is just a whole bunch of very nutty people.
Okay, but that sounds like a good endorsement, at least to me.
Oh, totally. Like,
To watch it.
I was actually also surprised at how well it did with both critics and audiences. And I was like, really? Okay, for once.
Yeah, for once, critics weren't snobbish with this.
And audiences knew what to expect. They weren't complaining about it being too over the top or violent or rude. It really isn't even all that rude. It's just silly.
That's all it was. It was silly. I wish he did a third one, but that probably never happened at this point.
They definitely have waited way too long.
Yeah, they did.
Because I think they both did good at the box office, so I don't know what the problem was.
Probably Bruce Willis. But no.
Ooh. Well, what about these shows? Who would have guessed that, again, Marvel and DC would still be doing TV shows?
Yeah.
That's true.
Well, I guess I'll talk about Lucifer. It just finished up. It really is a lot of fun, but it's kind of too good for its own thing because it's Neil Gaiman, you know, of American Gods. And
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, it even keeps itself separate from all the other DC shows except from when they did the Crisis on Infinite Earths team up. So, I mean, that's just how totally different path that it's going for. I mean, it was kind of too cute for its own good in season one where it was just basically the billionth Men in Black Hellboy type show. But then they decided, okay, let's be even goofier. Let's have some other wacky stuff. Someone hosts a party and it all literally goes to hell. Keep getting nuttier and nuttier. And, I can't believe it's already wrapped up after all these years. But once it went to Netflix, it's like, yeah, they had way more freedom to do what they
want. Well, that's good, at least, because that's on my to-watch list.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I've got a
You'll definitely dig the soundtrack. Ugh. If anyone's got any other wacky one.
What about Mystery Men?
Oh,
that's a good
point.
It's like, '99 was a big year for a bunch of people coming out with cult comedies and spoofs.
It was. It really was.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like half the time I'll see someone just talking about like a superhero movie, and some people will just say that like that's in their top 10 because they were a fan of the Dark Horse comic book. And
Yeah.
It does make you wonder, well, was it a hit or did it just catch on later?
It catched on later. It bombed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those cult classics that, you know, was not successful at first, but then out on VHS and DVD, hey, have you seen this? Yeah, it's great.
It came out at the right time to be embraced that way, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wild. I mean, what a cast.
Oh, yeah.
Buffalo, Pee Wee Herman, yeah, like, yeah. That is wild.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was what I grew up watching as a kid.
Yeah. Nice.
And I just imagine
Buffalo as Ebola. Network. Yeah.
That was the one character I've always loved was Ebola. It was just that I love so much.
I love that. She talked to her dad.
It's like, that's our dad.
Yes, okay, fine.
Man, and Champion City.
Yep.
I'm long overdue. I need to rewatch that.
Yeah, like Rick and Leah is like the hero of the city.
And right. They're all taking credit for each other's doings.
Oh, yeah. But Jeffrey Rush, I mean, oh, my God.
Oh, my God, that's right. He was the bad guy, wasn't
he? He's the villain, yep.
Before everyone knew he was an asshole, yep.
That was just perfect. Like, I even prefer that over his Barbossa role, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm going to have to rewatch this. Yeah.
Right?
It's sad because that director, this is the only film he ever did. That's because of just the production problems he had at the time.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, they were just forcing him to do everything but what he wanted to do at the time. And it's sad to hear, because I could tell he at least had some type of style at the time, but they just didn't give him the creative freedom that he wanted. Which is why he went to commercials. That's what he was known for, was commercials.
Yeah.
So
that is wild. And they had a bunch of special features on that DVD, which is so unusual, you know, for anything that it
flopped. Yeah.
Typically, they would not give it any special features, but someone must have been doing some serious talking, saying, hey, you got it for this. It deserves it. Oh, that's right. Kelly Mitchell from Good Burger was in there.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yep, that was much better than Good Burger. I'd say that right now.
There's a lot of people who just give this a 2 out of 4 star rating. They just can't get behind it for some reason.
Aw.
And it's just wild because it's like you would think this would have had at least a Austin Powers type crowd.
Right?
You would think, but no. It just didn't catch on with everybody. Especially, so I believe it came out in the summer, if I'm mistaken.
And yeah.
I think it was right around the time. Was it done the Mummy? Or was that after the Mummy? I forgot.
Let me look.
Oh, man.
It came out in... Okay, you look up Mummy, I'll look up Mystery Men.
Yeah, that's what I'll do right now.
All
right,
so sure. Mystery Men came out in July 22nd, 1999.
Let's see. I believe. Was that? No, May 7th. Okay.
So there you
go.
That
was the Mummy.
The Mummy probably took up business. Even though it wasn't necessarily liked by every critic, it was acknowledged for what it was trying to be. And I don't know. Mystery Men, you look at the trailer and it's like, what did anyone expect? I expected kind of something like The Mask or just some other kind of goofy John Hughes type comedy, and it did not eat up those numbers for some reason.
No, it didn't.
Speaking of which, it seems like The Mask is often kind of forgotten about, except for the fact that it stars Cam Diaz and Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Who's that?
I haven't seen
it in years, but I have no problems with it whatsoever from my recollection.
I don't either.
I recall it being just very fast-paced and just consistently goofy, as opposed to too dark or too rude or too gross, you know?
Yeah, I just figured it was a vehicle for Jim Carrey to do his stuff, you know?
There you go.
And it worked because it was a great balance between his physical comedy and showcasing he can act a little bit compared to his other comedies that year.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he learned very fast. Is like, I don't need Judd Apatow and all these other idiots. I need to just do my own
thing. Thank God.
Another one that gets shat on that is slowly kind of being reanalyzed a bit, but yet still kind of often, it's either sarcastically called Men in Black 4 or just called just Green Lantern 2 for those who don't like it, is Ripped.
Oh, R.I.P.D.
Yeah, R.I.P.D. Yeah.
Yeah, I was not a fan of that one.
You know, that is yet another movie where it's like, you know, this looks interesting, but I'll probably never get a chance to see it.
What's wild is everyone was looking at certain things about it being pushed around, and I saw people like predicting that it was going to flop, and I was like, that is so wild. Because it seems like the trailers are winning over people, but yet no one wants to see it, and yet no one saw it. So, and then yeah. It got decimated by critics. That was also by the director of Red, and yet, I don't know. I am very mixed about it because, yes, the main plot twist with who the bad guy is, you know from, like, it's revealed in, like, the first 10 minutes, but you already know it before it happens. So it's just like, what? But I really don't know what to feel about it. I find it very watchable. It's just been done to death. And yet, I guess
Jeff Bridges
was the best part about it. And I've seen so many other character actors who are in it who are now doing even bigger stuff, like Stephanie Sostock, I think. Sostock, who is been in movies like Iron Man 3 and is now on the show A Million Little Things. So it's like, there's definitely a lot of people who got their start in this movie as well as who have bit parts in it. I don't know. Maybe I could blame co-producer Neil H. Moritz for making every other visual effects shot look like it belongs in a Fast and Furious movie. So I don't know. I think it was too many.
Yeah, that was another problem. It was the CG at times.
Oh boy.
And yet, seeing that on the big screen, that was not fun.
I mean, I think, did Sony produce that? Or was that Universal?
I believe that was Sony, yeah.
So there you go. Then there was talk, oh, let's cross over with Men in Black. I'm like, let's not. Well, hell, I'll even mention Men in Black International. I was really surprised by this one. I did not know what to think of it. It flopped instantly and wasn't too crazy about the Thor guy, but I was like, yeah, you know, this is kind of a lot of fun, but it was not going to make in-game money. And how stupid of the studio to have it come out that same month. I mean, come on. It was like, here we're looking forward to the parts 3 and 4 of the Avengers, and you're having Men in Black 4, and everyone's already kind of exhausted after the last two weren't as big. And I don't know, I kind of like the separate way it went with it. It kind of reminded me more of the cartoon show. And Tessa Thompson was really having a lot of fun and really witty, but I know you weren't crazy about this one, John.
And it's not really because of the two leads, because I thought they clearly had chemistry. It was just the material they were given. That was my problem with it.
My issue was I predicted instantly who was the bad Men in Black.
And definitely.
Yeah, I've just seen too many movies, so it's just... My only issue with it was the rap club that they go to. I was just like, that was 10 minutes you could have easily excised. Nothing funny happened in it. It was just to show the world, but we already know how the world acts in this. Really, for me, the highlight was seeing Emma Thompson come back as their boss, and I was like, okay, she's having...
I'll give you that, yeah.
She's having so much fun in this role.
I mean, I did think they wasted Rebecca Ferguson in a nothing role, which...
Yeah, that seems to be her trend. Is like, she's such a good actress, and no one gives her any good roles. And it's like,
they don't.
People,
which is frustrating.
Is her agent Leroy Jenkins?
Must be at this point.
It's like, hell, Leroy.
Come on, man. Give us some good work. Come on now.
But even just going back to this for a bit, so I wonder, with RIPD, if Ryan Reynolds wasn't in that, would he have not had a chance to be in all the other movies like Hitman's Bodyguard and Deadpool?
I don't know.
Because it seems like everybody has to do a movie that's lesser or...
Yeah, but didn't he also do Green Lantern? That was...
You're right. Yeah. It was like,
yeah.
He kind of had at least two then.
So there you go. It's like, he was another guy. It's like, everyone finds him either funny or decent, but no one knows how to use him. So it's just like... It was kind of just that deal where it's just like, he's here, he is, and how do you use him? And it's just been so wild seeing him go on these drunken rants about seeing Green Lantern for the first time since it came out on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah.
Despite how bad I've heard it is, I still kind of want to see it.
You should totally see it. It is a cluster of epic proportions.
Oh, definitely.
Oh my God. It's so bad to where like the director was locked out and he just has disowned it. John, you got see part of his Reddit. Martin Campbell is best known for doing the James Bond movies, GoldenEye and Casino Royale. Wow. He's like, they said, release the Campbell cut. And he's like, not a chance.
He said, over my dead body. That's what he said to a user.
He
refuses to talk about that movie.
He just does not consider it his movie. And he's rebounded quickly by doing all these other revenge movies.
Oh, definitely. Especially the latest one, which I've told you about.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Protégé with
Maggie. Protégé.
So I'm a bastard. I can't help it. I really like all the Ninja Turtle movies. I just think they're just stupid fun.
Yeah.
And just take them as just that, because what else would you expect from Ninja Turtles? If you read the comic books, yes, they get very bloody. They're basically campy Deadpool Punisher, but it's like, I don't think that's going to happen. They're going to stay with what everyone knows the cartoon as, which is just...
Well, yeah.
Goofy, slightly PG-13.
Yeah.
With some partial innuendo, but not enough to be just gross and, not kid-friendly somewhat. So, yeah. I have been so tempted to see the UK versions of those. They have to be absolutely unwatchable if they're cutting out every use of nunchucks.
Wow.
Jesus. I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, because it's like their youth violence is really bad there, so it's like they had to cut out any use of Donatello and Raphael's weapons.
Wow.
Jeez. So it's like you see, and it's like even cutting out close-ups of them. I'm like, I can't even imagine what you miss.
That's just sad to hear, to be honest.
Oh. Yeah. So I know they're doing a new version of it, and I guess they're now owned by DC because maybe they're just licensed by Wolf or whatever company owns it. Because
well, there's two of them they're doing now.
Wait,
there's,
really?
Yeah, there's a cartoon one with Seth Rogen, I believe, and there's the third movie, which has, speaking of SNL, Colin Jost, and his brother is writing the third one of the Megan Fox trilogy. So
okay, so there you go. That makes sense to me. It can be just like current DC. It can be its different iterations of everything, and everyone can pick and choose which version of it they like and which one they don't. But it is kind of interesting how, it's like there was a recent, like, there's a bunch of those DC fighting games, and they had the Ninja Turtles, to where it's like, I think you could play as them, but they also appeared in a cinematic, like, fighting alongside Batman. I was like, why is this universe just now crossed over? Why did they cross over here? Oh,
because they weren't thinking.
There was a cheesy live action one back in the 90s, which for the longest time you couldn't even get the whole series. You could only get like a compilation of various episodes edited together, and sometimes they would even put that episode as like Ninja Turtles 4. I'm like, it's not Ninja Turtles 4, it's an episode.
What was it, The Next Mutation?
Some shit like that, yeah. And it's like they crossed over with Power Rangers or some crazy stuff.
Oh, and, Jesus.
And it's like, you could tell they would
film it. Oh, my God.
Because they were not seeing eye to eye with how each other wanted to film it. But it was the same kind of deal. It was like, oh, yeah, get on up and let's beat each other up. And I'm like, this is so weird. It's similar formula, but, I mean, come on, Power Rangers. It's a different kind of camp.
Yeah.
I mean, at least they also added a female member to the group.
Yeah, there was that. It was progressive.
It was
okay.
And wow. I forgot what they called her. Is like
Venus
it's like,
to Milo.
That's what it was. It's like Milo, and it's like when any scene that doesn't have April O'Neil, she's in there and she's kicking ass. And it's like, why was there not a female turtle to begin with? That it would have been so much more awesome. I don't remember what her persona was like. It was kind of like
I have no clue.
It was kind of like, I want to say Donatella. She was kind of peaceful and always giving Raphael grief from what clips I remember seeing.
Okay.
Oh, man.
I'm first hearing about that.
You didn't know. Okay.
Nope, I did not.
Oh, good. So, John, tell us about RoboCop sequels. How goofy those shitfests are.
Well, especially the third movie was where they really went to camp.
There was
level.
Like part two, let's have a giant RoboCop who he has to fight. And part three, let's have him have a jetpack.
Yeah, jetpack.
And then let's have Frank Miller write this. Oh, all his stuff is basically X-rated, so we got to rewrite all his scripts. We shouldn't have hired him to begin with.
And make him more kid friendly.
Yeah. Even though this was a satire, but everyone else thought, oh, RoboCop, it's a mindless action movie. It's like, it's not supposed to be an action movie. It's a corporation cyberpunk comic book. That's not based on a comic.
And then the second movie, which is very dark, a little too dark.
Really too dark. It's got a cursing kid as the secondary villain.
Which is aggravating.
Really annoying. What's funny is I didn't ever catch that because I saw it on TV, so I know all that stuff is edited out.
I saw it on DVD, so I was able to see all that for the first time. I'm like, what the hell? This is lazy.
Annoying. Oh. And then he dies.
Like, just kill him already. Like,
are we supposed to feel sad for him?
Yeah. I didn't buy that for a second.
Irvin Kershner of Empire Strikes Back, everybody.
I know.
Never like, made another movie after that. He hated the process so much. Well, I'm a bastard. I actually like the RoboCop rehash because it just kind of tried to do its own thing, like just be a tribute. And it kind of reminded me of Dread, like the 2012 movie. Did either of you see that?
I saw Dread. Yeah, I saw it at the theater.
It seems like Dread, they've been trying to do like either an Carl Urban wants to do like a Netflix follow-up or a follow-up movie, and despite making their money back finally on DVD and streaming sales, just no one wants to make it. And it's just like, it's like both of that and RoboCop 2 is like, even the new RoboCop, they wanted to do like a sequel to it, but now it's like they're just gonna try and do a direct sequel to the Peter Weller original and just ignore parts 2 and 3.
Yeah.
So I guess everybody is going the way of Halloween Kills. They're just like, just,
oh yeah,
don't, you know, everything one has a fan, but we only acknowledge like the first 3 movies of the original saga.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the new Scream will be, but that's
like, try and go. That must be the new trend, and that's kind of what they're gonna do with like this new upcoming Hellraiser show. And it's like, but it's like they're kind of doing that also with, I mean, for a while everybody was trying to look like the Dark Knight or the first Avengers. Yeah. So it's like, where are they going from here? And where is anybody gonna try and actually do a fun campy movie that you can actually take your kid to see that's not 3 hours long or too violent?
Yeah, that's the sad part there.
It really is sad. If anyone else has any other things they just vaguely recall seeing.
I was trying to think of some.
Man.
Ah, Mystery Men was good. I didn't even think about that. I should have.
That was a good catch, Shelley. Yeah. I know that one kind of inspired a bunch of other ones kind of around that same time. Like there was the Specials with Rob Lowe that was kind of like that. It was just D-list superheroes. Yep. Seems like, I don't know, how would you make something campy nowadays? Because it seems like now everyone's trying to be like Deadpool or The Boys.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, well, those are R-rated camp.
Yeah,
make it a little more PG-13-ish where it's, you know, there's something for both kids and definitely a lot of things for the adults that, you know, those are the fun parts, jokes that went over the kids' heads.
Oh yeah, I can't think of anything else. I think I've mentioned all the ones I mentioned.
Seems like if they're gonna do anything else from this point on, it's gotta be basically filmed with Joker money, where it's gotta be just filmed for $2 million or something like that, where it's just very super low budget. Everyone takes a pay cut, and
that'd be fun if they try and do that, but.
I couldn't get into Joker, but I like the whole strategy.
I couldn't either.
Get a A-list actor and then get a person who's not, who does comedies, do a dark, gritty movie. And then it seems like that's the formula now. Get someone who is popular for a totally different genre and get them to do something you least expect them to do. That's the new marketing ploy.
Well,
I've heard good things about Preacher, speaking of Seth Rogen, but I haven't seen it yet. But
yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've heard about that though.
It seems like that's the whole thing now, is like get actors who are just known for different kinds of things, whether it's a bad video game movie or a sitcom, and just have them do a role you don't even expect them to make.
Yeah, that's what it seems like nowadays.
Oh. Let me look real fast. What's this based on? A comic. I could have sworn it was based on a comic, but I am mistaken. Yeah, Into the Badlands. I could not get into that show to save my life, but it was written by people who are known for doing comic book-like stuff. Gogan Miller, who you might know from shows like Smallville or even Martial Law.
Oh, yeah.
A mighty warrior and a young boy search for enlightenment in a ruthless territory controlled by feudal barons. Yeah, I tried, but I could not get into this show.
I've always heard about it, I've never seen it.
Everyone loved it because it was like post-apocalyptic, had an unusual cast, and I was just like, yeah, this is just losing me. Oh. Wasn't Wu Assassins inspired by a comic?
Was it?
I don't know.
It did.
I'm asking you.
I'm not sure. If it was, then flew over my head.
Well, Shelly and John.
Did you guys ever watch Blade?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We actually did an episode on it.
Oh.
Do you think they're going to... Mahershala Ali is going to be playing the son of Blade? And they're going to be having Snipes make a cameo?
That's that kind would of the. Be cool.
I'm not sure how they'll go that route, honestly.
Because cool. They've kind of acknowledged it now to where, with some of the other alternate stuff, shows they're doing, they're just claiming now is like they're trying to revitalize it and change it up to where they are all actually part of the same universe. So that they don't ruffle any more feathers, but I'm not sure how that's all going to play out. But yeah, no, I am looking forward to Mahershala Ali's Blade. I think that will definitely. I like that he's sharing the universe with Doctor Strange because it's like they're very similar.
I mean, I called it when I saw him in the League of Battle Angel. I called him being Blade, you know, before it was announced. So that was good.
Yeah. It takes like, a manga to become a comic book icon.
Like, pay me, guys. I called it beforehand. So,
paid me. What would you guys like to see them do an adaptation of? But what just keeps getting stuck in development hell, or it just would take a very special, atypical kind of filmmaker to conjure up. It seems like, it seems like Adult Swim is like as close as you get if you want to do something that's just its own special kind of cult show, whether it's Pee-wee's Playhouse or Mr. Science Theater. Is like Adult Swim has all kinds of just wacky stuff that I never would have thought would have ever gotten put on the air. And then it seems like there's other channels that are slowly experimenting again, and then they just get canceled or they don't.
Yeah.
They don't make use of their time, and or just as they get good, they get canceled. So.
I think one film I'm curious to see if they I know they've been trying to do it. Michael Bay was attached at one point, which would have been curious. Like Lobo. I know he was willing to do Lobo for DC Comics.
Lobo. Okay.
Oh yeah.
And I would have been curious to see that, just to see him do a comic book film at least.
One that
so he would have approached that.
The only thing that comes to mind is, you remember in the 90s when DC and Marvel joined for a little bit?
I would love to see them do
the Amalgam comics.
Yeah, I mean, they could, and it seems like, I don't know, it seems like some of the DC shows are underappreciated, like Heroes of Legends of Tomorrow is kind of like the victor, and yet it's just not talked about as much as all the other DC shows, and people were really digging the Netflix Marvel ones, but by that point, Kevin Feige wanted control back, so he didn't want, you know, to deal with that chapter anymore. So it does seem like they could easily do a DC versus Marvel thing, but just, again, Warner Brothers and Disney do not want to share each other's money.
Really don't.
They don't.
And
but if they did that, they could both get so much, couldn't they?
They really could. I mean, I was waiting for, they could technically do Star Trek versus Star Wars. Paramount and Disney share money all the time.
So, yeah.
It's like that. It just, these are the equivalent of working at a certain company, and you just see two coworkers who deny that they don't get along, but it reads on their faces. It's like, who are they kidding? And it seems like, I don't know, it seems like you're seeing a bunch of TV channels take a bunch of, and even Amazon, take a chance on life, do little small regurgitations of stuff that's been in the works for years. Jenny Tartakovsky is doing a few things for cartoons and everything. So, I mean, did you guys see any of Wynonna Earp?
No.
Oh, I didn't see any of that.
Basically, it's a Western with vampires.
Nice.
Really?
And just other just wacky stuff.
That sounds kind of difficult to do, because you think of the West and you think it's sunny, dry.
It's now in like season 4 or some shit like that. Yeah, it's like it was on for a while and it kind of caught on Netflix, and I had been watching like season 1.5 for a while, and then I just couldn't keep up with it. But I was like, this is pleasant. This is laid back. Even the opening titles already kind of just, you know what to expect. It's just light camp. And main gal, Melanie Scrofano, was a badass. And it seemed like a lot of people liked it. So, I don't know. And then there was always this weird agent who came to town in a modern day version of Doc Holliday. Like, yeah, this is goofy. I like it. Dark Matter was really good too, and they canceled that prematurely, so we'll never know what. So if anyone's gonna watch it, watch all of it and then cut out after the last 10 minutes. Because that was pretty cool, just seeing a bunch of mercs in space, and it kind of begins like Memento, where they all have amnesia and they don't know who they are. And so then they just give each other... The viewer is able to follow it all very carefully, because it is kind of similar to Aliens and Star Trek and even Star Wars, just having... nobody has any clue who they are, and this human cyborg wakes them up, and... Android technically, but and then we're not expected to remember their names right away, but we know who their names are because the order in which they all woke up is the number they're given. So one of them's name 1, the other's 6,
yeah.
And it's just one of those. It was by some of the Stargate writers, and it was just so much fun just watching that back and forth with other stuff that was on around that same time. And it's just, again, it's just Universal just keeps shooting itself in the foot by not wanting to have these shows go on all that long. I'm like, well, you're killing whatever momentum you got going.
Yeah. Reminds me of sci-fi, like Sci-Fi Channel and I want to say WB, but there are all these different, you know, sci-fi and fantasy shows late 90s, early aughts that were just amazing. What was it? It was, I think there was Warehouse 13.
There you go. Yeah. Everything was very campy one night, serious
something
the other
else.
Night.
There's something else like a...
Eureka?
No, something else but Eureka, yeah.
What's
that other one? It was...
Defiance?
No. Oh, that's gonna bug me the rest of the night.
So this was way after Stargate and Battlestar Galactica, so it's gonna be one of those other goofy shows.
It's gotta be.
Is it any of those zombie knockoff shows they've been doing?
No, no. It had it was like there were two, were they reporters or were they agents? And there was like this pig guy.
It's just one of those other X-Files kind of shows.
Kind of.
Let me look it up.
Like,
shows.
Like, it was in the similar vein as Warehouse 13.
Okay. I will look it up now. Shows similar to Warehouse 13. Oh, was it Haven?
I don't think.
Stephen King's Haven. That was hysterical. One is like, they go into town and it's raining dead birds. Alphas was pretty cool. That was by one of the X-Men writers. That was an original concept and they canceled that prematurely. Was it Sanctuary?
No.
Was it Fringe?
No.
No.
I think it's
4400.
No, I think it started with an S, but I could be wrong.
It had a pig. Dresden Files?
No.
That was very underrated. I should mention
that. The book series is way better, but...
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Basically, with that one, they just wanted something that wasn't the Dead Zone that was on. Painkiller Jane was kind of fun.
Yeah, I heard that's fun. I haven't seen that, though.
What is it? That has a pig? Was that just one episode, or was that...
No, no, like, he was, like, he stayed there, and he was, like, I guess the guy looked up stuff for them, and they went out and found stuff. Oh, God.
Any actor who was in it?
Oh, God, I have no clue. I wish I knew.
Sleepy Hollow?
No.
Oh, wait. I think I know. The Magicians.
No.
No.
No?
I think that was based on a card, though. Oh, shit. What could it be? Supernatural show. Pig.
That's kind of what I've been typing.
Definitely a pig in an episode of Supernatural, but it's not Supernatural.
No, it's not
Supernatural. Oh, Grimm. It's got to be Grimm. Because I think someone does turn into a pig in one episode in, as a recurring thing. No? Maybe? Not sure?
No, like he was... Okay.
Is it older or more recent?
It's, I know it's older. Like, it was...
Okay, shit.
Yeah.
Sci-fi channel, for real?
Was it sci-fi? I don't know. Like I said, it was either sci-fi or, what was it, WB or...
It's live action.
Yeah, it was live action, I know that.
Was it kind of more horror or fantasy?
All I know is it was bizarre and funny, and it was canceled too soon. What's that?
Maybe it was Reaper.
No.
No.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Weekly World News?
Oh, I think I did.
Yes.
That's the weird kind of...
Yeah, that was the
Is it called The Chronicle?
That might be the one.
I don't know.
I think it is The Chronicle with Joe... Yeah.
See.
They said that has... Sal the Pig Boy, that's what they said.
Ah, there you go. John found it.
Is that him?
I just read about that. It had John Polito and Reno Wilson. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can find some episodes on YouTube. Octavia Spencer is on it before she...
Oh my gosh. Okay.
That might have to be it, yeah.
That might have to be.
Especially if he turns into a pig. That's gotta be the one.
That's gotta be the one.
Yes, that's it!
That's it?
So that was based on a comic. Or at least was similar to a comic.
Nice. Oh, that was Curtis Armstrong. Okay.
Oh, okay, and it was on sci-fi.
Nice. They needed something else that was weird than Sliders or the other shows they were rerunning, so.
Good thing I found that.
Nice catch.
Thank you. No, that was going to bug me all night.
You're going to make everyone frustrated. What are they talking about?
Sorry, folks. We had to look that up.
Had to. Well, I think we've just about wrapped it up. It seems like comics can happen, but you just got to find someone who's just willing to let them be weird.
Let them experiment. Yeah. That's why I say.
For sure.
I wish they would.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyone else who has anything to promote or talk about, let me know.
No, like I said, I'm just writing my reviews for Death Machine for the movie Elite, so be on the lookout for that.
You got it. And Thank you all for being on here. It's just too much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anytime.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast Cure All, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin cough, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in it.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
popping
up.
Little history doll popping up at you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was going to be a rough
movie. How did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey, everybody. I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 out. Bana 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 out.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes and gratuitous movies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy
at EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She Podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others? connect across borders, and inspire a biography which inspired this podcast. Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Semenov, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet. And in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a